community building, cares about making our life beautiful, cares about right living, and that passion is evident today in the concern about gun control, among other things, here in Zion. So I'm very happy to hear from Ron. And the person who's going to comment on his paper is Rob Bishop, who is chair of the Utah Republican Party and a lobbyist for the National Rifle Association. Is that correct?
No, we're close.
Close. So what's the proper...
The
Utah Shooting Sports Council. But okay, great. Rob and Ron are different points on the spectrum on this issue, where Ron is passionate, Rob is diplomatic, and they both will be respectful. And I expect that from this session we will have light, more light and less heat than this issue often generates. So this, we'll turn the time over to Ron, and we'll have a very nice beginning and a very nice response, and we'll go from there and see how our time holds up.
I'm a member of Utahns Against Gun Violence, and I don't want to represent that I am expressing any opinions other than my own in this paper. The real Olympic scandal. Salt Lake City is an ideal sponsor for the Olympic Games for many reasons. The people are pleasant and cooperative. The mountain setting is exquisite. In the highway system, hotel accommodations, developed ski areas, and new sports facilities provide an excellent infrastructure. We have spent a lot of money and should be proud of what we have built, but what the community lacks, money cannot buy. Integrity comes from within, and although the people are as good as people anywhere, the primary institutions have failed to provide the leadership for a world-class community. Both the Republican Party that controls the state and the LDS Church exhibit a moral blindness on the gun issue that is incomprehensible for citizens of other advanced nations. Here is a community so out of step with the rest of the world that both children and teachers take guns to school, 500 incidents one year, 30,000 people wander the streets with concealed weapons, and foreign terrorists could even buy assault weapons from private sellers at gun shows at the Salt Palace or through a classified ad in virtually any newspaper. This obtuse Hicktown mentality is far more scandalous than the bribery incident, particularly since local leaders act like nothing is wrong. Canadians look at us with the same wonderment as Europeans and Asians. Here is the most powerful country in the world, obsessed with military security, yet allowing 37,000 of its citizens to be killed each year from firearms. And here in this extremely religious state, there is no clear definition on the moral issue of guns. The state legislature has arrogantly rejected gun control laws common in every other advanced nation and has succeeded in making Utah one of the most permissive states in a gun-violent land. With a shameful start already, it would only seem prudent to do everything possible to prove we are a responsible host concerned about our visitors' safety. The main reason for hosting the Olympics is to enhance Utah's public image, both national and international. Yet the local power structure seems willing to accept optimum conditions for an incident of gun violence from which we would never recover in world opinion. Utah has a one-party political machine that is totally dominated by the National Rifle Association. The NRA packs the mass meetings, wins the majority of delegates to the state Republican convention, then demands all candidates coming out of the convention endorse the NRA. Bob Bennett and Merrill Cook confirmed this to me personally. As a result, the NRA makes gun policy for the state, and the GOP puts it into law. Like the Ku Klux Klan in the South in years past, the NRA wields an iron grip on the state's political structure and poisons the entire democratic process. It is extraordinary that an organized minority could achieve this level of power, and even more ridiculous that they set public safety standards for the state and therefore the Olympics. The International Olympic Committee demanded that concealed weapons be forbidden from Olympic venues, and the legislature responded by passing a law that was written basically by the NRA. The Salt Lake Olympic Committee security had to take what it could get from Mike Wattups, the author of the most permissive concealed weapons bill in the nation, and Rob Bishop, chief lobbyist for the NRA and chairman of the Utah Republican Party. Both men convinced that teachers should have the right to carry a concealed weapon in the schoolroom were the worst possible choice to broker any kind of security legislation. That, I'm not suggesting these are evil men, but they both have a very strong bias and virtually no experience in public safety. Absent were officials of local law enforcement and community leaders with common sense. Absent also was public outrage over how the deal was struck. The bill did not begin to address the security needs outside the venues, like bars, restaurants, hotels, concerts, and highways. Why would a host already guilty of bribery gamble on the absolute minimum security for guests? Why would they allow concealed weapons on the streets? It is ironic that two men were primarily responsible for the bribery scandal, and another two men who totally misrepresent the people of the state were allowed to make crucial decisions on Olympic security. Both events exemplify the corruption of money-buying power. It is if this kind of sleaze represents politics as usual in the state, then Utah is clearly not a world-class community. Unless the media, community leaders, and responsible institutions demand intelligent, well-crafted solutions for public safety, the Olympics could turn into our worst possible nightmare. As host for the Olympics, we should become an international community and embrace the highest standards of public safety. We should establish a broad scope of new laws and procedures for Olympic security, and also make them permanent solutions, not relegated to a six-week period. The time frame that was established for the law prohibiting concealed weapons in Olympic venues. If Utah is not a better place for hosting the games, then it is a waste of time, money, and effort. Politicians know that guns end up in the wrong hands, yet they have done nothing and gun deaths continue to escalate. Guns are the major cause of death for males 19 to 25 in the state. We have guns in schools because the NRA does not like gun lockup laws. A child dies each week from firearms in Utah, a condition that simply does not exist in other advanced nations. Emergency room doctors from Canada are appalled by the death toll we seem willing to accept. Guns in schools do not exist in other advanced nations either. Handguns are simply banned or tightly controlled. And Europeans find the whole idea of permits to carry a concealed weapon repugnant. Of course, the NRA claims that permit holders are all responsible citizens, which is another way of saying they are not felons or known to be mentally ill. That is like issuing a driver's license on the basis that the person is not blind. In a population of 30,000 permit holders, we can assume a certain number are on mind-altering medication or drugs. experience significant mood swings, have hot tempers, have a drinking problem, are totally lacking in common sense, or flat-out racist. The most dangerous are those with a vigilante complex who fantasize they can handle a violent crime better than the police. We have no idea how many permit holders are not qualified to carry a weapon of any kind, but we know there are too many. Over 60 permits were revoked last year. A mature community demonstrating public integrity solves crime and violence through cooperation of its citizens with their government, not through self-appointed vigilantes. Cooperation has always been a prime characteristic of the Mormon culture. Unfortunately, that is not the case with guns. The LDS Church is a dynamic new religion experiencing phenomenal growth, yet the silence of the church on the moral issue of guns is stunning. Every other Christian church has taken a firm position on various forms of gun control. The Catholics, Episcopalians, Methodists, Baptists, Presbyterians, and Lutherans, to name a few, define the moral tension between the commandment, thou shalt not kill, and handguns and assault weapons, weapons designed specifically for killing fellow humans. The LDS Church has made statements on carrying a concealed weapon in church and school, keeping guns from people with mental problems, and even questioned the need for owning an assault weapon, but has yet to address guns as a moral issue. The church has made a very clear statement on the moral issue of abortion and homosexual marriage. That is precisely what is needed on the gun issue. And here are the moral questions. What would Christ say about carrying a concealed weapon? What would he say about living daily, hourly, with a loaded gun and a willingness to shoot to kill? Is there a God-given right to own and carry a gun? What kind of God would encourage that? It is unfortunate that the major moral voice in the community is responsible for a moral relativism that gives the Mormon legislature every excuse not to cure its moral blindness. Women in the church have a much clearer moral stance on guns. They are desperate to protect their children's lives. Not so, however, for the men of the priesthood. We are not talking about hunters and sportsmen. We are talking about the male gun culture that finds a gun absolutely necessary for daily living. We even have bishops and stake presidents who carry a concealed weapon. The church has made a public statement about the importance of the family, but failed to mention that the children of gun culture families are 9 times more vulnerable to being shot and killed than children in 21 other countries. Or if there is a gun in the home, there is a 5-to-1 chance the gun will be used on a family member rather than an intruder. A gun show at the Salt Palace is often held on the same weekend as LDS conference, only a block away. Of course, liquor and pornography merchants would never have been given that same opportunity. Could any sex toy be more depraved than a handgun with a laser sight and loaded with bullets that explode on penetration? In Utah, pornography is out, liquor is controlled, and killing toys are in. What does that say about the local culture? Classified ads in the Deseret News hustling assault weapons only reinforces this moral ambiguity. The tragedy, of course, is that the vast majority of Utah citizens favor intelligent gun laws, the complete antithesis of the power structure. Like people in other advanced nations, they feel gun control is not radical. Turning a blind eye to the 37,000 gun deaths each year moves beyond radical to perverse, a depraved way of celebrating the Second Amendment. There is no reason Utah cannot be as safe as Canada, Sweden, France, Germany, Japan, England, Switzerland, Australia, and a host of other nations that provide laboratory proof that gun control works. And certainly none could be labeled a police state. Their citizens hunt, practice marksmanship, even collect guns as they do in the United States. But handguns and assault weapons have extremely tight restrictions. The only barrier to a safe society here is the NRA that holds the state and nation hostage. What a pitiful condition for the most powerful nation in the world, and what an indictment of a state that is considered the most religious. The state already has too many skeletons in the closet to remain unscathed from a violent event at the games. Visiting journalists, 9,000 expected, like a number of mystery writers, including Norman Mailer and the Executioner's Song, could use Blood Atonement, the Mountain Meadows Massacre, the Danites, Temple Oaths, quotes from LDS scriptures out of context, and polygamist wars to make a strong case that Utah was and is a violent place, totally misrepresenting the good people of the state and the LDS Church. If an horrific event did occur, the LDS Church would take the major hit because everyone looks at Utah as the Mormon state, and an international church critical of a pervasive moral relativism would be humiliated by its own moral ambiguity on gun issues. Cultures dominated by secular humanism exhibit a much higher moral standard relating to guns. Many citizens are concerned that Utah needs to do everything possible to enhance security at the games. We must decide whether we have to become whether we want to become a world-class community or remain an NRA community. We certainly cannot be both. As it stands, Calgary is a much more responsible and mature community host to the 2002 games. Utahns should demand equal integrity from their government and major institutions. Unfortunately, the people in the state are ready now. It is the leadership that needs to grow up. The spirit of the Olympics has always been a superb demonstration of stretching one's capabilities to the absolute limit, and in that same spirit, enlightened Utahns feel they should work to become the best, most responsible and progressive community in the nation. To do anything less is like an athlete taking steroids, an appropriate metaphor for the state legislature on the take. The bribery scandal has forced citizens to take a hard look at the state and its institutions, which can prove positive if we rise up and demand an honest, safe, and truly ethical community. If something horrific were to occur beyond our control, we could still hold our head high knowing we did everything possible to produce a safe and secure event. To do anything less would be folly. Salt Lake City and the Salt Lake Olympic Committee officials should demand an omnibus gun bill that would make public safety in the state a role model for the nation. Band-aid solutions won't get us there. We need intelligent, well-crafted gun laws. Canada, with the same frontier mentality, provides an excellent resource for proven solutions. The Utah legislature should give the people a right to vote on a shopping list of gun laws in the form of a referendum. Since the people are ultimately financially responsible for the event, they should demand the final voice on the safety and security of the community. What better way to demonstrate to the nation and the world that the people here have integrity and demand the same from their institutions? Only time will tell who will win the cultural battle. As things stand today, Utah is the flagship state of the NRA, and the LDS Church has yet to assume moral leadership on the gun issue. Salt Lake City remains a provincial community inflicted with civil and social pathology it seems incapable of curing, where bribery is the least damning element in the Olympic scandal. Fortunately, there is still time to do the right thing. It would be a terrible tragedy if a coddled gunslinging few kept the state from living up to its full potential as an enlightened community. Thank you.
a whole different level of responses that I could make to the presentation that was done there. One could be simply, in my view, considered Olympic boosterism. I am simply convinced that when the Olympics are actually held here, the superior nature of Utah's venues, which was the superior nature that was obvious when Nagano or Nagano got the nomination or the bid for the Olympics, that all other attributes of the Olympics are going to be forgotten. I could also address the concept of what I call simply religious boosterism. I was on a committee that brought a group of students, had a student competition in Salt Lake City many years ago. And of the 5,000 students and chaperones and teachers and adults that came with them, almost all of them had a chance to visit Temple Square and be associated with the Mormon Church in some way. I was surprised at the introduction the gospel had by that simple activity and the number of conversions that came to the church by those people who actually happened to attend. I'm convinced that when the Olympics are here as well, that the exposure to the Mormon Church will be a unique and significant advantage. The church will be able to receive elements or go into places that it would never before have been possible. And when that happens, the issue of the church or the truthfulness of the church will simply stand by itself. There is no need for the church to try and do some kind of makeover to make it more appealing to the world. They tried that in the 3rd and the 4th century AD. We simply refer to that as the apostasy. Now, there are some factual oversimplifications, in fact, quite a few, in the presentation that was made, and I don't have the time to try and go through them all, so let me hit the ones that I possibly can in the time that's allotted. The first concept is simply the 500 gun incidents in schools. There may be 500 incidents of violence that took place in schools, but in the last year that I have, for which I have statistics, for example, in Salt Lake School District, there were 17 incidents of students illegally bringing guns into the school. It's illegal for any student to have a gun in school of any kind. There were 116 incidents of violence with other weapons used in the Salt Lake School District that year. Granite, for example, had 28 incidents of illegal guns being brought in, but 179 incidents of other types of weapons being used in violent methods on school property. Which simply means that if you're going to talk about school safety, our schools are remarkably safe to begin with, but of the incidents that will take place, it is other weapons that are going to be the predominant instance of violence on public schools. If you want to talk about cutlery control, you are probably going to be more significant because of the chosen problem that schools simply have to face. We did a 3-year GRAMA study, Request District, on the number of incidents that took place over the past 3 years that dealt with concealed weapon holders or any kind of concealed weapon on school property. The total number of incidents in the state of Utah over those last 3 years, with one district that has yet to report, is zero. None of those with concealed weapons are doing any kind of incidents that took place on school property. Everything that takes place so far is already illegal under state law. I'm reminded of Charles Beard, who in either 1913 or 1917, I can't remember which year, wrote an economic interpretation of the Constitution. A good historian, a very good analyst, a wonderful writer, he came up with his book, but it was based on flawed data. His data was simply inaccurate. And even though his data has been discredited, the concepts of Charles Beard have since influenced generations of historians, teachers, and students on his view of the Constitution. I see that same thing in many of the data that was thrown out today and have been constantly used on the issue of guns. Concept that is a five to one ratio of the use of guns on an individual if it's found in the home comes from a Kellerman study, which once again had flawed data. Kellerman simply went to Seattle and Vancouver and explored the mortality rates of the two and made the conclusion that because Vancouver had a lower rate and Vancouver had tougher gun laws, obviously gun laws are the factor there. They didn't factor in anything else in the methodology. You could make the same conclusion that you are five times more likely to die of a homicide in your home if there are not Mounties patrolling the streets as policemen. And the irony was also that when Vancouver changed to its more strict gun laws in 1977, they actually experienced a 25% increase in mortality in Vancouver from the period of time when they did not have restrictive gun laws. That same Kellerman did another study from which I think this statistic came back in New England. But even in his reference, he said there are four factors that will be more likely to produce a homicide in a home than a gun. And they include substance abuse, family violence, living alone, or rentals. You are in greater fear as a renter of homicide than you are as a gun owner. That's simply from their own type of statistics. The entire issue deals with, is there some kind of public safety with concealed weapons, more guns in the community? The best studies done on that were still done by John Lott, who was at the University of Chicago at the time, now at Yale University. And he verified studies that were done by Kleck and Getz later on. His studies are significant because he is the only one that ever used both cross-section as well as time series data. He pulled up data from every county in the nation, not just selected counties, and he based his numbers on a 16-year running average. The conclusions were simply this. In areas that have shall carry permits, that's where people get to decide whether they actually carry concealed weapons or not, property crimes increased, but violent crimes decreased, which means criminals are still out there, they're just not dumb, and they change their targets based on the potential of retribution that could take place there, which means under that scenario, in every one of those areas where shall issue orders were put into effect, or shall issue laws, murder was down 8.5%, 12 in urban areas. Rape was down 5%, aggravated assault was down 7%. When Florida passed their shall issue approach, back in 1986, it was called, there was going to be the shootout of Florida. It was going to be called the Gunshine State. 300,000 people got permits. In one decade of those 300,000 people, only five were ever involved in an incident with a gun. None of those involved any kind of fatality. In Utah, since we have had our shall issue state laws into effect, the only incident of a concealed weapon permit holder using a gun illegally was one former legislator chasing down a suspect in a hit-and-run firing a warning shot into a ditch bank. The only crime used by a concealed weapon permit holder in the state of Utah is shooting an unarmed ditch bank. Actually, it was an unarmed city ditch bank. If it had been a county ditch bank, it would have been okay. There are laws against firing a gun in anything other than self-defense within community standards in Utah. Now, I know these kind of statistics are not necessarily, some people don't like them because they seem counterintuitive. How can more actually be less? But the reality is they are. When you have a preconceived notion of what should be logical, kind of like an optical illusion, at first glance it may look right, but on closer examination you realize there is some particular problem. The data is simply there. Women are four times safer in shall carry states than they are in not shall carry areas. Accidental firearm death is decreasing in shall carry incidents. The more guns, you do not have an increase. In fact, one of the oddities is in accidental shootings, two-thirds of all accidental shootings are done by police. Only one-third are done by common citizens. And in each of those situations, it is far fewer accidental deaths come from firearms than come from automobiles or even medical errors. The largest source of death for young men is not firearm death, it's cars. And the longest long-term source of death is smoking. Even the AMA came up with a study, it was in the paper this week, saying that there has been a three-year decrease in the number of firearm fatalities and the number of firearm accidents. And they tried to see if there was a correlation between areas where there were strong Brady Bill acts and weak Brady Bill acts, and the basic requirement was, by the AMA, there is no difference between those. The law is not going to be the thing that drives the common element. Utah is not, as was stated, the most permissive state. Vermont is. And Vermont has a crime rate that's 22% below the national average. In fact, you can do a correlation. The areas in this kind of stringent gun laws have the highest crime rate. The areas with the loosest gun laws have the lower crime rates. And Utah is not at either extreme. Utah has reciprocity laws, which makes our gun laws very common to 23 other states. Our gun laws are about in the middle of the Utah version. When Utah actually came up with the Olympic bill, I received criticisms from, obviously, Mr. Mullen from the one side saying it was not strict enough, from some very rabid gun owners on the other side saying I'd gone too far, which means if I'm being attacked from both sides, probably what we came up with was the right solution. But the Salt Lake Olympic Committee was not forced to accept everything. They were involved from the very outset in 1 year of trying to come up with a law that would fit their needs as well as fit the needs of the state easily. Both Shelley Thomas, who at that time was in charge of public relations, and Bill Shaw, their lobbyist, were strongly involved in it, and they were there with me side by side the entire time. It is true that no local law enforcement were there, but that's a disingenuous argument. Local law enforcement is not in charge of Olympic security, it's state law enforcement. and the State Department of Public Safety, including Craig Dearden and the others, were there on every step of the bill. In fact, there are elements in the state law that were put in there specifically at their request so that they could have an ease in administering the security element of the Salt Lake Olympics. State risk management was also heavily involved, because when we came up with the Olympic bills, it had the same criteria of every other exclusion to conceal carry laws in the state of Utah. That is, it had to have a controlled egress approach, exit and entrances, a defined perimeter that was defensible, protection would be guaranteed by some other actor, and the immunity was gone so that a person, if they could prove that they could they were injured because of a lack of safety, they would have that opportunity to be there. And that's why all those players were involved in it. Law enforcement has the same kind of approach. The Ogden Standard, 1 year ago, actually, did a major study in which they tried to go through the impact of Utah's shall carry concealed weapon permits. Let me give you some quotes of law enforcement on the area of gun control and Utah's concealed weapon permit law. Quoting directly from the article again, "I am surprised the number of concealed weapon permits aren't higher. The number of permits equals 0.009% of Utah's population. I have no problem whatsoever with honest, law-abiding citizens carrying concealed weapons," said Terry Thompson, Weber County Sheriff's Detective. "The statistic I care about is the fact that Weber County has 180,000 residents, but only 1,700 concealed carry permits," Thompson said. "That's less than 1%. That's nothing. My concern is the untold number who carry guns and don't have permits. Criminals don't get concealed weapon permits. Police are quick to point out that they haven't recorded a marked increase in incidents involving people with concealed weapons. It hasn't bothered police officers a bit," Sergeant Clint Anderson of the Weber County Sheriff's Office said. "It's the illegally held guns that get you." Thompson echoed the Bureau of Criminal Identification officials who say police don't feel threatened about all those citizens with concealed weapons. "Criminals who want to be armed were already armed and always been armed," said Police Lieutenant Randy Watts. "Police tactics and their survival-oriented thinking haven't changed because of all the new concealed weapon carry permits." Finally, a survey done by the Utah State Peace Officers Association, conducting a survey of all law enforcement officials in Utah, 70% agreed that a person of good character should be allowed to carry a concealed weapon. 96% felt that people should have the right to protect themselves and their family by use of firearms, and 80% did not feel that passing more stringent firearm laws would make their jobs any safer or any easier in that process. There were 60, actually he's slightly wrong on the numbers, there were not 60 permits that were revoked last year, there were 61 permits that were revoked and 55 that were denied out of over 4,000 applications. But in each one of those permit denials, it was done on an alcohol-related event or it was done because of a domestic order. Not one of those denials took place because of any kind of violent act. Even though the first year I was a lobbyist, we opened up what the police department, Department of Public Safety, can look at in establishing revocation denial patterns so that any misdemeanor can now become part of the public record to review to see if there's a pattern of abuse being done. What this simply tells me is, quite frankly, the system is working in some particular way. I was very impressed when I worked with SLOC over coming up with their bill. Lots of people have come and tried to use the Olympics as some kind of blackmail for the state of Utah, whether it be for road construction or for pro-abortion legislation, saying we have to change or we'll be a black eye to the world. SLOC never did that. They would never try to make this issue anything more than a technical issue, and they never tried to make it a political one. I'm still convinced there are people out there that think all government is evil. There are people out there that think all guns are evil. And if those two groups can stay away from the table, there is no issue that cannot easily be solved. Now, in conclusion, let me talk to you simply for a minute about my personal involvement in this particular issue. I am not a hunter. I'm not a shooter. I don't collect guns. I have never owned a gun in my life. I probably never will. I'm not even crazy about them to begin with. What I am crazy about is the Constitution. And I see this as a constitutional issue. And there will never be a solution until people realize that when Madison actually wrote his document, Madison was including gun rights as an individual right, not a collective right. Let me quote from him in the Federalist Papers, number 46. "The advantage of being armed, which Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, was not merely the defense of Americans' borders. It was advantageous in protecting political liberty. To preserve liberty, it is essential the whole body of the people always possess arms and be taught alike, especially when young, how to use them. That's what Madison meant when he actually wrote that. You cannot find a constitutional scholar in the 1700s or 1800s that had anything else other than that concept of individual rights with the Second Amendment. Even such cases as Dred Scott, which had nothing to do with the Second Amendment, used as part of their logic the individual rights guaranteed in the Second Amendment. I believe simply that Constitution and that Bill of Rights was an inspired document. I think it's unique that the word the scriptures use is that the Lord suffered it to be established, which means it didn't come easy. It had to be worked out. It had to be worked in hard. And it also maintains that it has to have a lot of effort to maintain that same kind of standard. I also realize that we have a problem in our society with excessive violence. It's a unique problem. Not a unique problem. It's a major problem. I realize that we have all sorts of elements of those violence within the religious community. I mean, even it is not the concept of whether violence is there, but the concept of how the violence should be done. If you have the missionary Ammon lopping off arms of sheep rustlers, or Moroni talking about the title of liberty, not in a joy of taking up arms for defense, but the willingness to do it under those certain kinds of situations. We have over 20,000 gun laws, both on the national and state and local level. That still doesn't stop people like Harris and Klebold from violating over 25 laws in going into Columbine High School. That particular incident was very difficult for me to comprehend on how that would actually work. We have millions of kids who will not violate those standards, yet you still have those two, despite what the laws are, who will go against it. You still have violence that's prevalent here. The other week I was reading where Korihor was going around preaching, and if you remember when Korihor went to Gideon, he found no converts for his message. He went to Gershon, he found no converts for his message. He went to Zarahemla, and he found converts for his message. And you got to ask the question, why? Did one of those have some kind of sidearm sword laws that made the difference? Well, when Korihor was finally struck dumb, he tried to defend himself by saying, "The devil made me do it." And that wasn't bought. And Alma kept pressing, and eventually he admitted that what he did because it was pleasing unto the carnal mind. In Zarahemla, they joined Korihor's group because it was pleasing unto the carnal mind. They simply did it regardless of what they knew was right or wrong because something in here allowed them and desired of them to do it. One of the prophets in a conference address in 1985 said, "The Lord works from the inside out. The world works from the outside in. The world would mold men by changing their environment, passing laws to force their control. Christ changes men, who then change their environment. The world would shape human behavior, but Christ can change human nature." If ever we are to have a handle on violence, it becomes even more and more prevalent in our society. It's not going to be coming by some kind of external control that doesn't work. It's going to be coming by trying to use Christ to enter into the heart. If we're actually going to move our society forward, it has to happen here. It's not going to happen in any other way, any other shape, or any other form. Thank you.
Yeah, we've got 15 minutes. Let's give Ron a few minutes to respond, and then give Rob and the audience. So let's try to keep it brief so everyone can be involved.
Rob's statistics were classic for the NRA. They have a lot of very minor statistics, but they don't like to discuss the big statistic. We kill 37,000 people a year. And why do we do that at 12 times the rate of people in other advanced nations? Because the country is awash in guns. When I came to Utah in 1953, I was raised a Mormon in Chicago, and I thought Utah was some kind of utopian society. At any rate, when I came here, I was 23 years old after fulfilling a mission. And the thing that absolutely stunned me is on the deer hunt, about 20 people were killed in the hills every deer hunt season. And finally, around 1964, 65, somewhere in there, they passed a law that required all hunters to take gun safety training. very simple gun control law. Well, that statistic dropped from about 20 down to 1. Gun control works. It works in every other advanced nation. If we've got so many thousand gun laws, our gun laws were passed not for public safety. They were passed to make it comfortable for the gun owner. Since 1972, the NRA has been a very powerful force. And don't think for a minute that Olympic law to keep guns out of the Olympic venues had anything to do with public safety. It had to do with what the gun owners and the NRA would accept. There's a little guy, Brian Judy, who lives in Sacramento, California. He is the legal counsel for the NRA. And every time the legislature meets, Brian, if there's any thing that the NRA is nervous about, they fly Brian Judy in. No lobby, absolutely no lobby has that kind of power to require every candidate that comes out of the Republican convention to endorse the NRA. That's real power. I don't know of any other lobby that has that kind of power. And how we let that happen, I don't know. But it's there. And Rob is a paid lobbyist for the NRA, and I'm sure that to work this out in his mind, he has to get this resolved internally, and I can appreciate that. But the end point here is that until the law that was passed to require all deer hunters to take gun safety training stopped a lot of gun deaths. That was the last significant gun control law that I know of in the state of Utah. Everything else has been going the other way. And until we really start to get a grip on this thing, our children are going to die. Rob didn't address the child who dies, one child a week in Utah. One this week, one next week. More than half are suicides. And everybody says, well, kids who commit suicide, they're going to do it anyway. No. Girls try to commit suicide at a rate 4 times that of males, but they don't succeed. And the males get a gun, and that's it. It's a final kind of thing. And an adolescent is a very unstable, going through a very unstable period. Anyway, that's just some random.
Any comments, responses? Anyone from the audience who has a comment? It'd be helpful if you'd be willing to walk up and speak in here, just so that the listening audience or the can hear the question, or we'll repeat it. Anyone have a comment? Yes, sir.
I wonder why there are not more people here that can address that question to you.
It's probably a combination of different things. A little early in the morning, although Saturday morning's traditionally been a pretty busy time. Seems to be a little slower this morning. Ron's session wasn't in the preliminary program, it's in the final program, so people who would have come just for that session wouldn't have had as much advance notice. And then, as to the ambiguity of the bio, of the abstract, I think Ron wrote that, did you?
I did.
Well, I didn't realize from the abstract that this was going
It would have been helpful. It would have been helpful had it been a little more clear what it's about. That's a good point.
Let me respond. I happen to think the problem is me. I've been known to drive away people on hordes before and put students to sleep, so it's probably my problem. It's my fault.
The people who do buy tapes are much larger than the people who attend, and so the session will be listened to and distributed in Utah and outside of Utah, so we'll have a large audience than we have here.
That they would have gone on and been successful citizens in this country.
Any comments?
far as the shooting of the brother shooting the sister, we try to get a gun lockup law in the state, and a lot of states have them. And the NRA doesn't want it. It's a very simple law that while the gun owner is absent, the gun has to be positively locked up, either in a safe or some other positive locking mechanism. And while we can't get that through, the argument is that if a guy needs the gun in a hurry, he'll have to unlock it. If you live in that kind of a world, anyway, no comment.
There are a whole different level of emotions that came through, especially with the school shootings. In each of those school shootings, the students openly violated law after law that was supposed to be there to stop that kind of behavior in the first place. Adding another two or three laws on top would not have changed any of that. There are only two incidents in which a school shooting took place where the person who was doing the shooting was stopped before he or she either ran out of ammunition or decided voluntarily to quit shooting. One is where in Oregon, where one of the other students grabbed the guy who was shooting, wounding himself, and the other was in Mississippi, where the vice principal actually had a concealed weapon. The perpetrator in Pearl, Mississippi, was leaving the building to go to the junior high and continue the rampage. He went to his car, got his gun, and stopped the kid in the parking lot and held him there until the police arrived, thinking all the same time that he had his own son there at the junior high. Everything else just went along with that. This is, as I said, not an issue in which laws change, but I think you hit it on the head. It's where we have a society that will start allowing or accepting these types of things. As Columbine hit, I had all sorts of things that were going through my mind, from the concept of why our society will tolerate so much violence in media, on game shows, on video arcades, why we have a society such a cavalier attitude towards life at the beginning of the cycle, and now we're having a cavalier attitude towards life at the end of the cycle, and what is the message that we're sending to our kids with that approach. All these things are tied up there, and that's why ultimately when it comes down to it, laws are proven not to change the attitude of individuals. We need to address, and that's where I think Christ plays the role in here. If society is improved, we need to address what's inside an individual, and then the environment will change from inside individuals. That to me is the key element. But it's very clear that passing a few more laws, making something more restrictive, does not have the effect it's supposed to have. In fact, it's counterproductive, which is why that becomes a counterintuitive argument, but nonetheless a true argument.
Just very quickly, the NRA claims that a armed society is a polite society, not a civil society, not a Christian society, but a polite society. To me, a truly grotesque society when no one trusts the other person. That's an attitude, and I think that's an ugly attitude. And I think that the idea that guns solve problems is another attitude. People who carry a concealed weapon think that guns solve problems. They cause problems.
Let me check our time. I don't have a watch, not your fault. We're out of time, so we'll have to continue this afterwards. It seems to me, partly in addressing your questions, these are hard social issues that every generation deals with, and there are values on each side. I think of the issue of liquor, you know, how it was such a terrible problem in the 19th century, moved us to prohibition and trying to solve whatever problems we had with the law, and then we back off from that, and we passed more laws with driving and stuff, and over time, public opinions do change, partly because people like Ron speak, and partly because people like Rob speak and get involved. So dialogue and conversation like this are very helpful, and I'm very glad both of them were here in this symposium. But these are intractable issues, and there are no easy answers, I think. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much.